This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. The world remembers a man whose legacy cannot be forgotten unless humanity should simply give up on the dream of justice and equality for all. Mandela, Madiba. The passing of Nelson Mandela, who by now you know died quietly in his home at the age of 95, is a global event. And we will try to give you a sense this hour, recalling the story of apartheid, Mandela, his struggle, his victory, and then his miraculous embrace of reconciliation and forgiveness, underscoring a powerful message unique in our time. There is no utopia in South Africa today, and justice and equality continues to elude the world at large. Nelson Mandela would be the first to admit that. Mandela's life, though, makes it impossible for humanity to claim justice is not worth the fight, or that victory is not possible. This hour, Mandela, in his own words.
We will have created a society which recognizes that all people are born equal, with each entitled in equal measure to life, liberty, prosperity.
We'll have testimony from those touched by him.
We've lost one of the most influential, courageous, and profoundly good human beings that any of us will share time with on this earth.
People who knew him.
I do remember after he was free, he was flying around the world, and I was working in the ANC office in London. And he arrived in London at the airport, gray with exhaustion. And I simply put him to bed and got him to lie down for half an hour, just to rest. He was overtaxing himself. And I just simply needed to make sure he survived. He was so important to us.
That's Nelson Mandela's good friend Dennis Goldberg, who was imprisoned with him during his time on Robben Island. Mandela writes in his autobiography, The Long Walk to Freedom, that he was late to awaken to the call of politics and the struggle for liberation. In the 1940s, in college in Johannesburg, he found a community of white, black, and Indian intellectuals, young people who would form the vanguard of future political movements. People of my own age, he wrote, firmly aligned with the liberation struggle, prepared to sacrifice themselves for the cause of the oppressed. At Mandela's trial in the 1960s, the conviction that sent him away to Robben Island prison for 27 years, co-defendant Dennis Goldberg was one of those activists, prepared for a future he and Mandela could not know for certain, and a dream of victory they never discussed in the midst of the battle for freedom.
You know, one doesn't have that kind of discussion. What you are doing is working together to achieve a vision. And the vision was a South Africa free of racism by law, which was apartheid, which took away the rights of black South Africans and colored and Indian South Africans and left whites absolutely dominant. We were going to get rid of it. That was the vision. And here you had a leader, Nelson Mandela, together with other leaders, he always stresses that point himself, who was inspirational. And after all, we were on trial together in 1963 for having created an underground illegal army to do battle with the apartheid state. So I can only speak for myself. I don't think we expected to survive. We hoped to. We really hoped to, but the vision was a free South Africa. The prize was the freedom. That was the hope.
To gain that freedom, has Mandela always maintained that it was a war, or was he more a Gandhi-like figure in his approach? Certainly, he was absolutely straight-ahead politics all the way.
He was a political leader, and if we took up arms, it was to achieve a political purpose. War was not a principle with us. We were being subjected, and our people were being subjected to violence on an unprecedented scale, where every peaceful protest was met with imprisonment, with violence, with massacres, and so we took up arms to show the apartheid regime that the people would be able to develop the power, the military power, to take power. But we would prefer to negotiate a political settlement in which there would be equal political rights for all South Africans. The goal was always political. How do you I don't want to sound like a blind hero worshiper, because this is what has happened. And Nelson Mandela has become a worldwide icon of the man who single-handedly brought freedom. But he himself says over and over, he worked with others, he was a leader among leaders, great leaders. Oliver Tambo made Nelson Mandela famous because of that speech of Nelson Mandela's in the trial. He wasn't going to back down. He, in fact, confronted the judge. He said what our vision was, which was a society where we could live together in harmony and in peace. And it was an ideally hope to live to see achieved, because there was the threat of the death sentence. But if needs be, it was an ideal for which he was prepared to die. And this was an open challenge to the judge, the white judge, and the whole of the white media and apartheid South Africa. And in the end, I came to understand that he was saying to the judge, hang Nelson, hang Walter Sisulu, hang me, I was number three accused, and hang all of us. But there was no fear. There was a kind of elation at sharing this moment. I mean, he was under fire. He was stating our aims clearly, confidently, a bit of challenge in his voice, but not boastful, not history will absolve me. It was, this is an ideal. And I think that speech was crucial in changing the understanding of both the judge and, I think, the world about why we had taken up arms. You asked about Mahatma Gandhi, who developed his theories of passive resistance in South Africa, because there was an immigrant Indian population who had been brought in as indentured labor and whose rights were not very great. So he learnt this there, and it affected the whole of our liberation movement, not as a conscious policy, but as a hope to avoid violence. There was also a very strong Christian mission element within the liberation movement. You know, pie in the sky when you die. The life hereafter will be better. And so for Nelson Mandela and his colleagues to take a step away from that and to convince people of the necessity of that struggle and to convince the court and many white South Africans and the world of the justice of our cause was a remarkable feat. And for me, this is the greatness of the man, that when there were new situations, there were new answers needed. His whole history in political activity from the 1940s onwards showed this ability to analyze, to understand what the enemy, the apartheid government, would do and how to mobilize the mass of our people against it. That's brilliant.
Do you remember the first conversation you had with Nelson Mandela once he was, in fact, the leader of South Africa?
I don't, actually. I met him after he had been released and I'd been released, and it was clear he was going to become president. And we met on Robben Island, where he'd been imprisoned, and he was having a meet the press day. And we just had an interesting conversation about our experiences and our understanding. What I find astonishing is that, having grown up as a little boy, as he did in a rural area, he had this wish to go beyond the mountains of the Eastern Cape rural areas, to get to Johannesburg, to see the wide world, to understand the problems and to commit himself to a life, in which he would emulate his forebears in their heroic resistance. He says it in his autobiography, to the colonization of South Africa. He would be a leader to set people free. And this is, I think our conversations were always about politics and what we were doing.
Well, we're very grateful for that. It's interesting. You didn't say, how is the food at Robben Island? None of that.
That comparison. Prison food is not a topic of conversation.
Yes, indeed. Even now.
Yeah. What you think about is the chipped enamel bowl and the rusty spoon. Later stainless steel became modern. Yeah. What I experienced with Nelson Mandela after prison, one of the conversations I had with him was to say that he does what I do when you tell prison stories. You tell the story and you end it with a little wry twist so that your audience isn't left with a sense of defeat. It's like sweet and sour in cooking. You have to leave people hopeful. But I said to him, you meet the press constantly, and so you can afford to get a laugh out of it. But we have comrades who were treated so badly and so badly hurt, psychologically and physically, that you do need sometimes to show anger, not bitterness, anger at the abuse of power. And he sort of looked at me and asked others around. They said, oh, well, Dennis, we've won, don't be bitter. And I reiterated, anger, not bitter, at abuse of power. And I was pleased in his inaugural speech when he accepted the presidency. And he said with a very firm voice, something like, never, never, and never again will we allow one group to dominate over another as in the past. And I felt vindicated, because there was the firmness and the determination that I hoped to hear him say, as well as his tremendous effort at reconciliation, of trying from the beginning to remember the past, but to try and build something new. Our policy from way in the 1940s was South Africa belongs to all who live in it, black and white together. And he set about trying to achieve that. And that's equally remarkable.
Dennis Goldberg, former co-defendant with Nelson Mandela at the Rivonia trial in 1963. More about the life of Nelson Mandela all hour long on The Takeaway. Continuing our remembrance of Nelson Mandela's life and looking at South Africa's reaction to his passing, we go now to Anders Kelto, Africa correspondent for PRI's The World. He's in Cape Town. Anders, welcome.
Thank you, John.
Give us a sense of the feeling, the inevitability, of course, but also the emotion.
I think everyone's still in a great state of shock. I mean, a lot of people woke up to this news last night around midnight. The combination of sleepiness and surprise just really caught people off guard. I mean, Nelson Mandela was very close to death about 5 or 6 months ago. And since then, he's been in this perpetual state of, quote unquote, critical but stable. And I think everyone had just sort of gotten used to him being in that condition. And it almost seemed like he would persist in that condition forever. And then this announcement really sort of came out of the blue. No one was expecting it. And though, like you said, it was inevitable, it's still hard for people to accept.
Although because of that experience a few months back, a lot of people had a chance to really think about what he has meant to this country and to the world. And in some of the statements we're hearing out of South Africa from people, even on the street, there is a sense that people have thought this through, a real eloquence there. Are you feeling that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone has known that this moment was inevitable. His name, his image, his memory, is everywhere in South Africa. Streets are named after him. Buildings are named after him. He's on literally every single bill, the 10, the 20, the 50, the 100, and the 200. His legacy is so big here that people are, you know, still struggling to come to grips with that reality.
In that political world in South Africa that Nelson Mandela has not been a part of for so long, a lot of calls today for the best way of remembering Nelson Mandela would be to redouble efforts to achieve justice, to deal with some of the problems in South Africa, to heal the divisions. That's really one of the messages today.
Absolutely. I mean, if Nelson Mandela symbolized anything, it was unity. He transcended political parties. He transcended race. He was a unifying figure, and he is still a unifying figure, and he always will be in South Africa. Although his death at the same time is causing a bit of political shakeup here. There's been a lot of movement on the political front here in the last year with several new political parties forming. The ANC, Nelson Mandela's party, has slowly been losing its very firm grip on power. They still retain a large majority, but they're starting to see some of that support erode. And there is a suggestion that his death might accelerate the movement of some people away from the ANC, and including international support for that party, which has essentially ruled South Africa since it came to democracy almost 20 years ago.
Speaking to us from Cape Town, South Africa, Anders Kelto is the Africa correspondent for PRI's The World. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Voices and impressions from inside South Africa being heard today. Also, the seeds of influence that Mandela planted around the world. We last spoke with Ntsepeng Motema, South African writer, on Mandela Day, July 18th of this year, just after Mandela was so near death for a few weeks. Events Anders was just describing from Cape Town. 29-year-old writer Ntsepeng Motema joins us once again. Welcome, and your thoughts today.
Thank you. You know, when I found out about the news of Madiba's passing, it was through a friend of mine called me and said the president is on TV, announcing that Madiba's passed, and I was shocked. And I think since then I've had a range of emotions. There's one of sadness, and there's also that sense of relief, if I can say, knowing that he's finally resting after such a long time of being ill. He's already suffered enough under the hands of the oppressive regime. There's also that of joy. And when I say joy, I say because as South Africans, we're people of song and dance. We sing and dance when we're mourning, when we're celebrating. And today is no exception. I was watching a TV station earlier doing a live crossing to Soweto Township in Johannesburg at Vilakazi Street outside Madiba's house. And in the background, there were people who were mourning and celebrating Madiba's life. They were singing and chanting struggle songs. And I found myself singing to these songs. And, you know, the tears just started rolling down my face. It was joy, though. If you can just give me a minute to just sing a short line from one of the songs. If I may.
Sure.
It goes something like this. Nelson Mandela, Nelson Mandela, akekho fana nawe, Nelson Mandela. It's a Xhosa song. It's a Xhosa song, Xhosa being one of the South African languages. Translated, the song says, Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela, there is none like you. Mm. Nelson Mandela, spear of the nation. And being so far away from home, I'm just going through all these thoughts and emotions.
Well, we'll let you wipe your tears there for a moment while I ask you this question. You're working now in Qatar as a freelance journalist. This is a global event. But give us your impressions, your earliest impressions of Nelson Mandela as you were growing up and understanding the significance of this man and how much of your history is bound up with his.
I know Mandela from how my mother raised me and my siblings. She'd always talk about this great man, this great Mandela. At the time, we didn't know who she was talking about, but she was speaking about this man, that there was, you know, this big struggle and that someday he would be released. And when that happens, things are going to change and that things are going to get better for us. And when it finally happened, when he came out and we saw who this Mandela was, we already, you know, had an idea of this man, and we're celebrating like we knew him. Mandela is like a part of my family, like a grandfather, someone that you talk about like you know him personally. And I don't know him personally at all. I've only briefly met him for not even, you know, more than a few moments at an event. But how, you know, we talk about him, I don't even just say, you know, when I talk to my mother, we refer to him as either Madiba or the old man. That personal connection to who Mandela is, even though my mother and myself have never interacted with him on a personal level.
Well, we certainly understand that you miss your home today, being there in Qatar as a working journalist, but your friends and your takeaway family are with you today. And Sepang Motema, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
29-year-old freelance journalist and South African, and Sepang Motema.
Lost one of the most influential, courageous, and profoundly good human beings that any of us will share time with on this earth. He no longer belongs to us. He belongs to the ages.
President Obama evoking a line spoken upon the passing of Abraham Lincoln. He belongs to the ages. Nelson Mandela's life was longer than Lincoln's by a lot. He got to see the outcome of his struggles, unlike Lincoln. And for us, the gift of Mandela's voice and words are very much with us. Mandela wrote in his autobiography about his wide interests as a young man, his embrace of life, his passion for its possibilities. Did you know he was once a boxer? I did not enjoy the violence of boxing, he wrote, so much as the science of it. I was intrigued by how one moved one's body to protect oneself, how one used both a strategy to attack and retreat, how one paced oneself over a match. Think of the boxer Mandela now as you listen to these words, Mandela presenting his defense to the court in his 1964 trial, nearly 50 years ago.
At the outset, I want to say that the suggestion made by the state that the struggle in South Africa is under the influence of foreigners or communists is wholly incorrect. In my youth, I listened to the elders of my tribe telling stories of the old days. Among the tales they related to me were those of wars fought by our ancestors in defense of the fatherland. I hoped then that life might offer me the opportunity to serve my people and make my own humble contribution to their freedom struggle. This is what has motivated me in all that I've done in relation to the charges made against me in this case.
Attacking and retreating. Humility in victory, having paced himself for the long fight. Here's Mandela speaking before a U.S. Congress in 1994 that had not always spoken with one voice about the struggle against apartheid. But Mandela's remarks were generous.
We came to salute you for the place you had taken in the universal assault on apartheid, which had made it possible that once more the authentic organizations of our people should speak for the people freely and without seeking the permission of those who sought to ensure that the people had no voice except the voice of subservience.
Mandela was never afraid to urge any of the world's citizens to put aside their petty concerns and embrace a larger vision, which he unabashedly told Congress in 1994.
That each one of us as nations, including yourselves, should begin to define the national interest to include the genuine happiness of others, however distant in time and space their domicile might be.
Soft-spoken, clear, and direct. My favorite words from Mandela come toward the end of his autobiography. I was not born with a hunger to be free. I was born free, free in every way that I could know. The words of Nelson Mandela. This is The Takeaway. Thinking about Nelson Mandela, and of course we are thrilled to have with us Rafer Guzman and Kristen Meinzer, the Movie Date podcast host and co-host. And we would normally be talking about movies this on a Friday. Welcome to both of you.
Hi,
thanks,
John.
This is really an opportunity for you, who are a film critic for Newsday and Kristen Meinzer, Takeaway producer, to talk really about the significance of Nelson Mandela as a culture figure. I mean, he's like a Mona Lisa figure. That face, you can put anywhere and it's instantly recognizable. I mean, in pure pop terms and in historical terms, what do you make of Nelson Mandela, Rafer?
You know, when I think of Nelson Mandela, I think of him more in terms of the music that I grew up with. And that's where he first came to my attention. Not so much in movies. I hadn't seen him as a movie figure. I hadn't seen him portrayed much that way. But it was the music, and when pop music began taking on certain causes, Nelson Mandela was one of them, and I think the one that really brought him to light for most Americans and that I think really helped free him from prison was this one by The Specials, a.k.a.
That's great stuff. And, you know, there are so many songs that come out of the apartheid struggle, some which refer directly to Mandela and some which, you know, refer to other figures like Steve Biko, that sort of...
The Peter Gabriel song, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Kristen, once Nelson Mandela was free and his face became recognizable, he became the subject of documentaries and fictional treatments in the movies.
Oh, yeah, and so many big stars have played him. We had Danny Glover playing him in the HBO movie in 1987. We had Sidney Poitier opposite Michael Caine in Mandela and de Klerk in 1997. Terrence Howard last year in Winnie Mandela opposite Jennifer Hudson. And notably, the new release that's in theaters right now, in limited release, Mandela Long Walk to Freedom, based on his autobiography. And this is a totally different depiction of him, starring Idris Elba.
When you speak in public, you must represent the policies of the ANC.
Now, what does that mean?
We are negotiating. We are not fighting a war.
But the people have chosen to fight. The people are angry.
We are all angry. I am angry. You are angry. But you must show loyalty. Loyalty, Winnie Mandela.
Now, what I think is amazing about this depiction in this movie is we see a side of him that's not in most movies. Mostly we see him as very peaceful, mm-hmm. very quiet. We see him as old and gray and wise. And this movie shows him as virile. It shows him as young. It shows him with his whole life ahead of him. It shows him as a little boy and a 45-year-old. And I think it makes a different picture of him for the public that we've all kind of been missing.
Mandela's also a reality TV star. Right?
Oh my gosh, in some ways a much bigger star in real life than he ever, ever, ever has been in the movies, because how can you top the story? 27 years in prison, born into royalty and then becoming president, and this life of his is so incredible, and he always was making appearances on shows. One of my favorite appearances was Oprah.
Our emotion said the white minority is an enemy. We must never talk to them. But our brain said, if you don't talk to this man, your country will go up in flames. And for many years to come, this country will be engulfed in rivers of blood.
Even Oprah speechless there in that appearance. Who could imagine that? You know, I'm reminded, you talk about the music, Ray, for Guzman. The Sun City, playing Sun City,
yes.
Whether you played Sun City or not, was a defining feature of pop music during the 1980s.
Yeah, I mean...
Remind us.
Yeah, well, I remember when that song came out, it was Steve Van Zandt who had spearheaded that and, you know, got everyone in America. And this was the time of, you know, Band-Aid and We Are the World. This was, I think, 1985. Yeah, and it was everybody. It was Peter Gabriel, Miles Davis, and a lot of hip-hoppers, because hip-hop was really on the ascent at that point.
Well, we'll take you out on some of the music from that time. Rafer Guzman, Kristen Meinzer, co-hosts of the Movie Date podcast. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, John.
Listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Perhaps the greatest achievement of Nelson Mandela, the bravest, or perhaps at the time somewhat outlandish principle even, was his embrace of reconciliation to resist the urge to punish the white apartheid oppressors once they were removed from power and to instead create a process whereby hatred and anger could be channeled. Truth would be told about the crimes of the past, and forgiveness would be offered as a way of moving on. The truth and reconciliation process is a model for conflict resolution worldwide, and it continues today. We spoke with Vern Harris, head archivist for the Nelson Mandela Center of Memory at the Nelson Mandela Foundation in Johannesburg.
Key to the formula which he embraced and which we attempted to implement in the 1990s was an economy of exchange, if you like. In other words, there will be amnesty for perpetrators of human rights violations, but there needs to be a trade-off. And if you don't have that trade-off, you do ultimately promote cultures of impunity. And I think here in South Africa, this is where we've really struggled, because we went through that very painful Truth and Reconciliation Commission process. We had thousands of people coming to talk about their experiences. We had people applying for amnesty. Now, we haven't followed through in terms of those who failed to get amnesty, those who completely ignored the process, those who regarded the process as beneath them. There needs to be some accountability. There needs to be an honoring of that economy of exchange. And the reality is that we haven't seen prosecutions taking place, and in consequence, the whole process now has a question mark.
How does memory contribute to this sense of accountability and a sense that there will be impunity unless things are remembered and accounted for?
Well, for us at the Nelson Mandela Center of Memory, right at the heart of any attempt to answer that, what is a profound question, has to be this belief that memory is not about the past. It's about the future that we are committed to making.
How does the archive that you are managing about Nelson Mandela himself contribute to that process, to that understanding?
I would single out the contents of his personal archive, which reveal to users, researchers, readers, a Nelson Mandela who is far more complex than the public figure which dominates our public representations of him. A Nelson Mandela who's flawed, who has made mistakes, who has wrestled with his own weakness as a human being. And I think it's important for South Africans particularly, but people around the world, to reckon with that Nelson Mandela.
On some level, Vern Harris, do you believe that Nelson Mandela is a person of such stature in the world in terms of history and in terms of the pro-democracy movement in human civilization that he does not
deserve or should not have the privacy we might grant to someone else?
Absolutely. And I think it's something that he has confronted himself over some years. The first encounters I had with the archival dimension and the contents of this arguably, for most human beings, deeply private space was in 2001. And in all the conversations I had with him subsequently, his message has been, you don't have to protect me. And that, I think, reveals the extent to which he is aware of the line that you're naming now and what that might mean for public engagement with his own story and with his history.
Mm. What are the sorts of things that you have in the archive? Artifacts. What's, for instance, one of the earliest pieces of Mandela-ness that you have?
Well, look, let me say immediately that this is not a vast archive. It should be, but the ravages of his life experience, you can imagine being underground, being detained, being in prison for many years and so on. But nonetheless, he has, for most of his life, being an obsessive record keeper. And so you might not be surprised to hear that he had kept right through his life his Methodist Church membership cards going back to 1929 when he was 11 years old. Those are the oldest documents in the collection. But, you know, we've got materials that go right through his life and are about a human being keeping note and reflecting on daily experience.
What do you think, personally speaking, the significance of Nelson Mandela is, and how did you first encounter him in your own life?
It's a good question. That I think that it's fair to say that for any progressive South African over the age of 20, Nelson Mandela's personal story is also the founding myth of our post-apartheid country. And so it looms large, and it's true for me as well. But it's ironic in a way because my career in the last decade has been very much about ensuring that that story is conveyed to broader audiences and to new generations of South Africans. But I believe that if we are to grow up as a country, if we are to move beyond adolescence, we need to find a way of not relying on him as a leader, on his narrative of struggle and ultimate victory as one that gives us direction. We need to find new narratives. And this is something he's been inculcating in people around him is, you know, you need to stop relying on me so much. And that's a challenge for all of us. We have to find new narratives while not forgetting the role that he's played. But we need to interrogate that role and we need to find ways of being critical. And until we do that, we'll be relatively immature, I would say.
Well, Vern Harris, thank you very much.
Great pleasure.
Vern Harris is the head of memory programming at the Nelson Mandela Center of Memory at the Nelson Mandela Foundation. He spoke with us from Johannesburg.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, the brain training program designed by neuroscientists and used by 50 million people, created to improve memory and attention. More at Lumosity.com.
How did this man from a remote village in South Africa become the symbol of justice and freedom for all people?
When I went to school, the lady teacher, Miss Mdingane, asked, what is your name? I told him my African name, Raholislas. He says, no, I don't want that one. You must have a Christian name. So I said, no, I don't have one. She says, you are from today, you are going to be Nelson.
His African name meant troublemaker, and so Nelson he became. Nelson the student,
became Nelson the activist and then Nelson the criminal defendant, causing the greatest trouble of all for the white apartheid regime in the country that insisted that he take a Christian name. Today we all live in the world Mandela helped create. His influence as a revolutionary, a warrior against apartheid, and then a peacemaker, statesman, and symbol of reconciliation goes far beyond South Africa.
Free, free, free Nelson Mandela!
I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony.
That's Mandela speaking a few days after he emerged from that prison cell and the beginning of a whirlwind tour.
Many observers are fond of comparing Johannesburg with New York. For our people, New York has a special meaning and even fascination. I am therefore very pleased to receive the key to the city of New York.
Keys to the Big Apple for Nelson Mandela back in 1990, on his way to becoming the leader of the nation he once fought a war against as head of the African National Congress.
Fellow South Africans, the people of South Africa, this is indeed a joyous night. Although not yet final, we have received the provisional results of the election. My friends, I can tell you that we are delighted by the overwhelming support for the African National Congress.
Mandela, the president, no longer a prisoner, no longer a general. Like a George Washington of our time, he removed the uniform of a guerrilla and became a world leader with a campaign promise that sounded more like a religious homily.
Never, never, and never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience the oppression of one by another.
Bring back Nelson Mandela, bring him back home to Soweto. I want to see him walking down the streets of South Africa. Hey, tomorrow!
Mandela's struggle to create a history for his people, South Africa's attempt to stop history on the matter of race, the global profile of the anti-apartheid struggle, all dominated the 20th century. From the Boer War that broke South Africa away from the British Commonwealth to the armed struggle against the white domination of South Africans' black and mixed-race majority to the international political consensus that apartheid had to go to Mandela's ascension as leader of a new South Africa, a narrative to fill a century. Only the world wars, the Holocaust, and the nuclear age are bigger epics, and Mandela's 95-year-long story may be the most quietly human of them all.
On Robben Island, when things got very bad, I found inspiration in a poem.
A poem?
A Victorian poem. Just words, but they helped me to stand when all I wanted to do was to lie down.
That's Morgan Freeman as Nelson Mandela in the movie Invictus. Mandela's life has been put on screen, sung about in anthems, for most of his life. He is perhaps unique in this role to be so memorialized while still alive. Sidney Poitier here in the film Mandela and de Klerk.
Both you and I know what the outcome must be.
Free and democratic elections for all people.
I am under no delusions, but I will not countenance power grabbing. Power sharing, yes, but not the blind abandonment of all power.
Majority rule is not power grabbing.
No whites would be comfortable in a country dominated by blacks.
For more than 300 years, you have been dominated by blacks.
Danny Glover was an anti-apartheid activist in college during the 1970s. He played Mandela in a TV drama in 1987 while Mandela was still in jail.
We will continue to resist these inhuman laws until every one of them is repealed.
And the latest, Idris Elba as Madiba in the film The Long Walk to Freedom.
I have cherished the ideal of a free, democratic society where all persons live together in harmony with equal opportunities. It is an ideal which I hope to live for and achieve. But
if it needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die.
An actor's voice, Nelson Mandela's own sacred words. Mandela certainly lived and died for the principles of freedom and equality. But for 95 years, it was his living every day for those principles that is perhaps the greatest treasure for all of humanity. God thank you for the gift of Madiba, retired Archbishop Desmond Tutu told a packed church memorial service. Thank you for what he has enabled us to know we can become. Thoughts for you and from you. If you could use a single word to describe Nelson Mandela, what would it be? A lot of you said courageous, brave, visionary. Dana Franchetto wrote, tenacious. He never gave up the struggle for freedom for himself and his people, no matter how overwhelming the odds appeared to be. Madeline Berlin's one word, extraordinary. Everything about him, his ability to show compassion, see the bigger picture, and what was best for all.
Hi, I'm Jeannie from Mississippi. The one word I use to describe Nelson Mandela is true. He was the one leader who was true to what he stood for, not caught up in corruption, and served as a real example of what one person can do to make a real, true difference in the world.
My name is Dallas Myers. I'm calling from Kaiser, Oregon. My single word for Nelson Mandela is legacy. Because years from now, decades from now, we will still be having conversations about his accomplishments, his struggles, and victories in civil rights and humanitarianism. He's truly a great man.
This is Anne from Connecticut. My one word for Nelson Mandela, grace. He fought his fight with strength, eloquence, and patience.
Grace, legacy, true. Share your memories and thoughts of Mandela at 8778-MY-TAKE. Send us a tweet at The Takeaway now. He belongs to the ages, said President Obama. He belongs to all of us. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.